This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at 104.3. Tonight's story is quite interesting. I read it while I was homesick with that four-week flu and thought, wow, I'm not as sick as this guy. So you get a chance to get settled, and I will be right back with tonight's story by Roddy Dowell entitled Blood. Stay tuned. This is Ms. G. I'm back with Roddy Dowell's Blood. Tonight's story here at Telling Tales with Ms. G at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. He grew up in Dracula City. He'd walked past Bram Stoker's house every day on his way to school. But it had meant nothing to him. He'd never felt a thing, not the hand of a ghost or a shiver, not a lick on his neck as he passed. In fact, he was nearly 18 in his last year at school before even he'd noticed the plaque beside the door. He'd never read the book, and probably never would. He'd fallen asleep during Coppola's Dracula. One minute his wife was screaming, grabbing his knee. The next she was grabbing the same knee, trying to wake him up. The cinema lights were on, and she was furious. "How can you do that? What? Sleep during a film like that? I always fall asleep when the film's crap." "We're supposed to be out on a date." "That's a different point," he said. "For that, I apologize." "How did it end, anyway?" "Oh, screw off," she said, affectionately. That was possible in Dublin. So the whole thing, the whole Dracula business, meant absolutely nothing to him. Nevertheless, he wanted to drink blood. Badly. The badly was recent and dreadful. The itch, the urge, the leaking tongue, it was absolutely dreadful. He wasn't sure when it had started. He was, though, he knew when he'd become aware. "How do you want your steak? Raw?" His wife had laughed, but he'd been telling her the truth. He wanted the slab of meat she was holding over the pan, raw and now. Screw the pan, it wasn't needed. He could feel muscles holding him back and other muscles fighting for him. Neck muscles, jaw muscles. Then he woke. But he was awake already, still standing in the kitchen, looking at the steak and looking forward to it. "Rare," so he said. She smiled at him. "You're such a messer," she said. He hid behind that, the fact that he acted the eejit, that it was him as he bent down to the charred meat on the plate a few minutes later and licked it. The kids copied him and they all ended up with brown gravy on their noses. He made himself forget about his aching jaws and the need to bite and growl. They all watched a DVD after dinner and everything was grand. And it was. It was fine. Life was normal for a while. For quite a while. Weeks, he thought. He opened the fridge one day. There were two filet steaks on a plate waiting. It must have been weeks later because she, her name was Vera, she wouldn't have bought steak all that frequently. And it wasn't the case that Vera did all the shopping, or even most of it. She just went past the butcher's more often than he did. She bought the food, he bought the wine, she bought the soap and toilet paper, and he bought the wine. You're such a messer. He grabbed one of the steaks and took it over to the sink. He looked behind him to make sure he was alone, and then devoured it as he leaned over the sink. But he didn't devour it. He licked it first, like an ice pop. It was cold. He heard the drops of blood hit the aluminum beneath him, and he felt the blood running down his chin as if the blood was coming from him, and he started to suck it quickly to drink it. It should have been warm. He knew that, and it disgusted him. The fact that he was already planting his disappointment, setting himself up to do it again, this feeding and need and addiction he suddenly had and accepted. He growled. He freaking growled. He looked behind him, but he didn't care. You're such a messer. He chewed till it stopped being meat and spat the pulp into the bin. He rubbed his chin. He washed his hands. He looked at his shirt. It was clean. He ran the hot tap and watched the black drops turn red, pink, then nothing. He took the remaining filet from the fridge and slid it off the plate into the bin. He tied the plastic liner and brought it to the wheelie bin. "Where's the dinner?" Vera wanted to know later. "What?" "I bought filet sticks for us. There." She stood in front of the fridge's open door. They were off," he said. "They were not." "They were," he said. "They were minging. I threw them out." "They were perfect," she said. "Are they in here?" She was at the bin. The wheelie," he said. He hadn't expected this. He hadn't thought ahead. "I'm bringing them back," she said as she moved to the back door. "That crapper." She was talking about the butcher. "Don't," he said. He didn't stand up. He didn't charge to block her. He stayed sitting at the table. He could feel his heart, his own meat, hopping, thumping. "He had always been grand," he said. "If we complain, it'll, I don't know, change the relationship. The customer-client thing." He enjoyed listening to himself. He was winning. "We can have the mince," he said. "It was for the kids," she said. "Burgers." "I like burgers," she said. "You like burgers." The back door was open. It was a hot day, after a week of hot days. He knew she didn't want to open the wheelie and shove her face into a gang of flies. They had small burgers. The kids didn't complain. That was that. Out of his system, he remembered, he saw himself attacking the meat hanging over the sink. He closed his eyes, snapped them shut. The idea, the thought of being caught like that, by a child, by his wife, the end of his life. He'd killed it, the urge. But it came back days later, and he killed it again. The fridge, again. Lamb chops this time. He sent his hand in over the chops and grabbed a packet of chicken breasts, one of those polystyrene trays wrapped in clean film. He put a finger through the film, pulled it away. He slid the breasts onto a plate and drank the pink, the near-white blood. He downed it off the tray and vomited. Cured, sickened, revolted, never again. He stayed home from work the next day. Vera felt his forehead. "Maybe it's the swine flu." "Chicken pox," he said. "You're such a messer." "You must have had the chicken pox when you were a boy," she said. "Did you?" "I think so," he said. She looked worried. "It can make adult males sterile," she said. "I had a vasectomy," he told her, 3 years ago. "Oh, I forgot," she said. "I didn't." But he was cured. He'd sorted himself out. The thought, the memory, the taste of the chicken blood, the polystyrene tray, it had him retching all day. He wouldn't let it go. He tortured himself until he knew he was fixed. It was iron he was after. He decided that after he'd done a bit of Googling when he went back to work. It made sense. It was fresh air across his face. Something about the taste, even the look of the cow's deep red blood. It was metal, rusty. That's what he craved. The iron. The metal. He'd been looking pale. He'd been falling asleep in front of the telly like an old man. Anemia. Iron was all he needed. So he bought himself a carton of grapefruit juice. He knew the kids would never touch it. And he went into a chemist on his way home from work for iron tablets. He regretted it when the woman behind the counter looked at him over her specs and asked him if they were for his wife. "We share them," he said. She wasn't moving. "I'd need to see a letter from your GP," she said. "For iron?" "Yes." He bought condoms and throat lozenges and left. By the time he got home, he knew his iron theory was shite, and he'd push the grapefruit juice into a hedge with the condoms. The kids were right. Grapefruit juice was disgusting. There was nothing wrong with him, except he wanted to drink blood. He had kids. That was the point, a boy and a girl. He had a family, a wife he loved, a job he tolerated. He worked at one of the banks, not high enough up to qualify for one of the mad bonuses they'd been handing out in the boom days, but high enough to have his family held hostage while he went to the bank with one of the bad guys and opened the safe, although that event had never occurred. The point was, he was normal. He was a 41-year-old heterosexual man who lived in Dublin and enjoyed the occasional pint with his friends. Guinness. Loads of iron. Played a game of indoor football once a week in a leaking school hall. Had sex with his wife often enough to qualify as regularly. Just about. But it was just a thought. Never a real ambition or anything urgent or mad. He was normal. He took a fillet steak into the gent's toilet at work, demolished it, and tried to flush the plastic bag down the toilet. But it stayed there like a parachute on top of the water. He fished it out and put it in his pocket. He checked his shirt and tie in the mirror, even though he'd been careful not to let himself get carried away as he went at the meat in the cubicle. He was a clean, spotless, normal self. He checked his teeth for strings of flesh, put his face right up to the mirror. He was grand. He went back to his desk and ate his lunch with his colleagues. A sandwich he'd made himself that morning, avocado and tomato. No recession in his fridge. He felt good. He felt great. He was controlling it, feeding it. He was his own doctor and in very good hands. He'd soon be ironed up and back to his old, even more normal self. So, he was quite surprised when he went over the wall. Even as he went over, "What the hell am I doing?" He knew exactly what he was doing. He was going after the next door neighbor's recession ends. At 3 a.m, he was going to bite the head off one of them. He'd seen the hens. He wasn't sure if you'd call them hens or chickens. From one of the upstairs windows, he saw them every night when he was closing his daughter's curtains after he'd read to her. See, he's normal. There were three of them, scrambling around in the garden. He hated them, the whole idea of them. The world economy wobbled, and the middle classes immediately started growing their own spuds and carrots, buying their own chickens, and denying they had property portfolios in Eastern Europe. And they stopped talking to him because he'd become the enemy and evil because, well, he worked in a bank. The shiftless person next door could pretend she was busy all day looking after the hens. Well, she'd have one less to look after because he was over the wall. He'd landed neatly and quietly. He was fit. He played football. And he was homing in on the hens. He knew what he was going to do. He was hoping a light would go on. Upstairs, or better, downstairs, or next door, in his own house. Frighten the crap out of him. Send him scrambling back over the wall. I was just looking to see if I could see the space shuttle. It's supposed to be coming over Ireland tonight. He'd bluff his way out of it. Also, it won't be stopping, while his heart thumped away at his ribs. It would sort him out for another 3 days, a week. It would get him over the weekend. But no light went on, and the chickens cluck-clucked. "We're over here." He grabbed one. It was easy, too easy. It was a lovely night. They were as clear as they could have been, standing in a row like a girl band, the Supremes. Shouldn't they have been cooped up? What was that phrase? And let out again in the morning? The city's foxes were famous. Everyone had seen one. He'd seen one himself strolling down the street when he was walking home from the station a few months before. He grabbed his hen, expected the protest, the pecks, but no. The hen settled into his arms like a little kitten, stupid little kitten. The little head in one hand, the hard, scrawny legs in the other, he stretched out like a rubber band and brought it up to his mouth, and he bit, kind of. There was no burst of blood or even a clean snap. The neck was still in his mouth. He could feel a pulse on his tongue. The hen was terrified. He could feel that in the legs, but he didn't want to terrify the bird. He wasn't a cruel man. He just wanted to bite its head off and hold his mouth under its headless neck. But he knew he didn't have it in him. He wasn't a vampire or a werewolf, and he needed a filling. He could feel that. I was biting the head off a chicken, doctor. He'd put the hen down now and get back over the wall. But a light went on, and he bit. Downstairs, right in front of him, and the head came clean off. There was no blood, not really. Just, well, bone, gristle, something wet. He wouldn't vomit. They'd be staring out at him, the neighbors, him or her, or him and her, Jim and Barbara. But he was quick, he was calm. He knew they couldn't see him because, well, the light was on in the kitchen and it was dark out here. Although, now that he thought of it, and he was thinking, they might have seen him before they turned on the light. And now the chicken, the headless dead chicken, decided to protest. His squawk came out of something that couldn't have been its beak, because the head, detached, or at least semi-detached, was in one of his hands. He was holding the body by the neck, and it was wriggling. Let me down, let me down. He dropped the hen, heard it running away, and he charged. He ran out the wall, not his own wall, he was thinking. The wall on the other side, two houses down from his own. He was up, no sweat, and he was over. He sat down for a while to get his breath back, to work out his route home. He listened. He hadn't heard the kitchen door being opened, and the hen seemed to have accepted that it was dead. The other two hadn't noticed, or they were in mourning. It was very quiet. He was safe. He thought he was safe. He was stupid, exhilarated, appalled, ashamed, weirdly freaking delighted, and safe. He looked up at the sky, and he saw it. The shuttle, the brightest star moving steadily across the night, the Endeavor. He remembered the name. He was back in the bed. She woke, half woke, his cold feet, his weight on the mattress. What's wrong? Nothing, he said. I got up to see the shuttle. Great. She was asleep already. It was amazing, he said, addressing her back. Amazing. He kissed her neck. He actually slept. It was Friday night, Saturday morning. The bed was empty when he woke. It was a long time since that had happened, since she'd been awake before him. He felt good. He felt great. He'd flossed and brushed before he'd got back into bed. No trace of the hen between his teeth. He gargled quietly till his eyes watered. No bad taste and no guilt. He shouldn't have done what he'd done. But a more important consideration quickly smothered any guilt. It was the thought he'd fallen asleep with, clutching it like a teddy bear, just after he'd kissed his wife's neck. Next. It was as simple as that. The blood was a red herring, so to speak, sent to distract him by his psyche or whatever, his conscience, to stop him from seeing the much healthier, obvious. It was necks he'd been craving, not blood. He didn't want to drink blood, and he was no more anemic than a cow's leg. The simple, dirty truth was, he wanted to bite necks. It was one of those midlife things, and that was grand, it was fine, because he was in the middle of his life, give or take a few years. Sex, simple. He wanted to have sex with everything living. Not literally, he wanted to have sex with most things, some things, most women. He was a normal man, slipping into middle age. His days were numbered. He knew this, but he didn't think it. A year was 365 days. 10 years was 3,650. 30 years gave him 14,600. You have 14,600 days to live. That's fine, thanks. As he lay on the bed, he felt happy. The urge was gone because he understood. His mind was fine, but something in him had been running amok. His biology, or something like that. Not long ago, only a few generations back, he'd have been dead already, or at least drooling and toothless. Middle age and the autumn years were modern concepts. His brain understood them, but his biology, his manhood, didn't. He only had a few years of writing left. That was what biology thought. More to the point, a few years of reproducing. And maybe the vasectomy had made things worse, or more drastic, sent messages haywire. He didn't know. The human mind was a funny thing. He'd been dying for a ride, so he bit the head of a neighbor's chicken. He went downstairs. "A fox got one of Barbara's hens last night," said Vera. Well, that was kind of inevitable, wasn't it? "That's a bit heartless." "It's what foxes do," he said. "When?" "What? When did the fox strike?" "Oh, last night," she said. "Did you hear anything when you were looking at the shuttle?" "Not a thing," he said. "Just the astronauts chatting." She smiled. "You're such a messer." "About what?" "Oh, just about how much they love Ireland." "How's Barbara?" "In bits." "Did she say she felt violent?" "She did, actually. But you're such a cynical bastard." She was laughing, and he knew. He was home and dry. It was later now, night again, and he kissed her neck. He bit her neck. They were a pair of kids for half an hour and still giddy half an hour after that. "Well," she said, "I'm ready for afters." Her hand went exploring. "Back in a minute," he said. He went downstairs, went to the fridge, 2 mackerel on a plate. He looked in the freezer, pulled out a likely bag, a couple of pork chops. He put the bag under the hot tap till the plastic loosened. Then he tore away the plastic and went at one of the chops. But it was too hard, too cold. He gave it 30 seconds in the microwave and hoped and dreaded that the ding would bring her downstairs. He stood at the kitchen window and nibbled at the edges of the chop and hoped and dreaded that she'd come in and see his reflection. The blind was up. Before she saw him, that he'd turn and reveal himself some kind of vampire, having a snack, and she'd somehow find it sexy, or at least reasonable, and forgive him. And put her hands through his hair, like she did, and maybe even join him in the chop, and he'd bring her over the wall so they could get Barbara's last 2 hens, 1 each. He'd bin the rest of the chop, shook the bin so it would disappear under the other rubbish. He'd waited for the right moment. The visuals were important. There was a huge difference between being caught devouring raw steak and licking a frozen pork chop, or inviting your life partner to do the same. There was no hurry, no mad rush, no madness at all. He was normal. He went back upstairs. She was waiting for him, but not in the bed, or on the bed. She was standing far away from the bed. "What's this?" she asked. She turned on the light. She was holding a head on the palm of her open hand. Small head. "A chicken's head," he said. "Where did you get it?" "I found it." He was a clown in Egypt. He'd hidden it under his socks. "It's Barbara's," she said, "isn't it?" "Barbara's head would be a bit bigger," he said. It didn't work. She didn't smile. "Did the fox drop it in the garden?" she asked. She was giving him an escape route, offering him a reasonable story, but it was the wrong one. He'd found a chicken's head and hidden it. He wasn't going to admit to the lie. It was sad, perverse. "No," he said. "Well," she said, and looked away. "What happened?" "I bit it off," he said. She looked at him again for quite a while. "What was that like?" "Great," he said. "Great." I hope you enjoyed Blood by Mr. Roddy Dowell. This is Ms. G bringing you Telling Tales, and I will be right back here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. Thank you. again. This is Ms. G here telling tales at 104.3. So I hope you enjoyed Roddy Dahl's Blood. I know I enjoyed reading that. We have a few minutes before New Letters on the Air, which is coming up next. And I'd like to read you a little poem by Elizabeth Page Roberts. Be, don't seek. Sit warmly open, lightness in your brow, not questions. Be ready for the quiet when it comes, and the creaking of the house's bones, and the wind's music playing the notes of the trees. Be, don't brood. Don't wait for life to announce itself in capitals or high garb. Be available to its whispers. Know how to listen when it tells its true self, not the lies you've dreamt up. Be able to breathe and let go of your breath. Let go of life as you wish it to be, and take in the simplicity, the facts. This sky is, this day is, this sparrow is. Be, don't try. Your weariness must have shown you something by now. Stay seated in your soul. Remember the sun is there. Truth and time are there. Be, don't seek. You've already found. You already have. You already know. You already are. That's by Elizabeth Page Roberts. This has been Telling Tales with Ms. G. I've enjoyed being back with you on the air. Have a safe and wonderful rest of your week. Until next time, good night.